ABC Listen. Podcasts, radio, news, music, and more.
Hi, it's Sam Hawley here. Today, an interview from our ABC colleagues on one of the stories making news. I'll be back on Wednesday with all new episodes of ABC News Daily.
Hello, I'm Sydney Peed, coming to you from Gadigal Land, Sydney, with the news on ABC News Daily. It's feared more than 500 people have been killed and tens of thousands more arrested during violent anti-government clashes in cities across Iran, which have now entered their third week. Iran's Islamic regime is using deadly force to crack down on the unrest, which has been growing in response to soaring inflation and the weakening of the country's currency. Now, many Iranians are calling for an end to the regime. But information is scarce, with authorities cutting off communication inside Iran, also jamming satellite TV channels and blocking internet access. On state TV, the country's president, Masoud Pezeshkian, blamed the riots on enemies of Iran, including the US and Israel, which he claims are encouraging acts of sabotage by protesters.
The United States and Israel are sitting there, giving instructions to these people, telling them, go ahead, we are backing you.
The US President Donald Trump is now considering options to attack Iran over the killing of protesters.
There seem to be some people killed that aren't supposed to be killed. These are violent, if you call them leaders, I don't know if they're leaders or just they rule through violence. But we're looking at it very seriously. The military is looking at it, and we're looking at some very strong options.
The regime has warned it will retaliate if the US intervenes. Today, Middle East correspondent for The Economist, Greg Karlstrom, on how seriously Iran's leadership is taking threats from the White House. But first, Nagin Shirogai, a British-Iranian activist and founder of the Azadi Network, which supports minority groups inside Iran, on the uprising and why so many are taking to the streets. She's speaking with ABC News Radio's Sarah Morris.
What more have you been hearing about the scale of these protests and the response, of course, from the government forces as well?
Since evening, nighttime Iran time on Thursday, and there's a complete shutdown of the communication with Iran. There is no internet, and even inside Iran, contacting each other is impossible. But also, there's a lot of activists send some Starlinks to Iran, so we managed to get some news since then. I have to admit, since this morning, I had no connection even via Starlink. It's been impossible to get through and get more news out. But we know there has been protests. There's some trickles of news coming out. But we also seen some of the footages that came out. Someone left the country. And that video is quite horrifying. I'm not going to go into too much details of it. But it basically shows that in one city, in one day, there's 250 dead bodies, and the government is like, it's a monitor that shows the pictures of these people, and the count says 250. So we expect the number goes much higher. I've been talking to activists in other cities, and I know there has been dire situation in those cities as well. We know some of the sources told me from each unit in the police, one of them has the right to kill and live ammunition in their guns, but also they have snipers in places, and they don't shy away from killing people because that's the Supreme Leader also ordered the other day. So they're going to crack down as much as possible in the hope that the people would be afraid and go back home. But people, from what I hear on the ground, they say we don't have anything else to lose. We've been out over the years so many times, we want to overthrow them. And this is our push, and we're going to go until they fall down. But as the pictures are showing, it's a really bloody battle.
It does sound horrific, and like you, we're seeing just a few pictures that are able to come out. You mentioned there that people say they've got nothing to lose. We have sort of been here before, and the regime has managed to quell protests like this before. Is this situation different? Is there anything different this time around that gives those who want to see regime change hope?
So to understand what happened and why this is different, I have to go a little bit back to give you a sense of what happened the last 6 months in the economy of the country. So after Women Life Freedom and the massive crackdown, you know, there were a lot of killings, maiming people. People felt really angry, but then they felt frustrated because the government didn't collapse. But still, that anger was still alive in their hearts, in their bodies. And also, at the same time, they had to face this worsening economical situation that was worsening day by day. But also, in this last 6 months, we've seen a lot of corruption-related, you know, rise of prices and the collapse of the Iranian currency, massive collapse of the Iranian currency, which is also linked to the corruption in the system. The price of egg, for example, eggs overnight went 300% up. So it got to the point that managing your day-to-day life became impossible. And people felt, oh, what else am I going to lose? And then we shouldn't forget this protest started with the protest in Iran's bazaar, you know, the marketplace, which is historically has a really psychological significance. This is a place that when they joined the protests during the former Shah of Iran, you know, in 1979, that led to the collapse of the regime and then, you know, the Islamic Revolution. So the bazaar is starting a protest soon after other people decided to join. And then all of those grievances, they were compiling up. And then since Tuesday, we saw there is a shift because before that, there was like 10% support for Pahlavi, 10% support for Islamic Republic. And that was shown in data, you know, the pollings. But then suddenly people felt, what do we have to lose? And then maybe we go out there and Pahlavi and Trump talked about, you know, freedom of Iran. And they said, maybe we can topple the government with the help of others. So I think there is it's a really complex situation because there's so many demands out there. But then we hear some of the demands towards one person or the other. But also it's not as easy as that to say, oh, if Trump attacks the people of Iran are supporting that because it's a complex situation because they know at the end, you know, Trump doesn't do it for democracy or for them, but also they don't have anything else to lose because they've been killed on a daily basis. And the footages that are showing, they're just open fire randomly and killing people. Right now, there's another video came out of a burial of one of these protesters that the police attacked a burial ceremony. So it's been constantly losing your life either on the streets or feeling, okay, we're going to go until for our children we can create a better future. That's unfortunately the situation at the moment.
That was British-Iranian activist Negin Shirakai speaking with ABC News Radio's Sarah Morris. Greg Karlstrom is a Middle East correspondent for The Economist. He's speaking with ABC journalist Jade McMillan.
The New York Times is reporting that President Trump has been briefed on military strike options against Iran if the crackdown continues. How seriously do you think that's being taken inside Iran right now, particularly by the leadership?
I mean, I think they're taking these threats seriously based on experience. You know, they remember what happened last summer when Trump spent several months issuing threats to the regime around nuclear negotiations. Those negotiations went nowhere. And then he ultimately followed through on those threats and carried out airstrikes against Iran's nuclear facilities. So there is precedent here for Donald Trump making good on threats that he makes towards the Iranians. But I think the question is, you know, what exactly is he planning? It was one thing over the summer to carry out this discrete one-off strike against a very particular target, the nuclear sites. It's another thing to promise to rescue protesters from the regime, to protect them from being attacked by the regime. What that means in practice, I think, is a lot murkier.
Yeah, what kind of options do you think Donald Trump could be considering here?
I mean, there's a menu of options ranging from, if you're talking military options, a symbolic strike on one end of the spectrum, which I think would be largely ineffective and might end up being counterproductive because it would show that he's not actually planning to rescue the protesters, as he says. And then it could be something more concerted, a more extensive campaign of strikes against the Revolutionary Guard, all the way up to perhaps an effort at decapitating the regime, at taking out senior members of the Revolutionary Guard, perhaps targeting the supreme leader himself. I'm sure any of those things are on the menu of military options that have been presented. But then I think what's also being considered, and perhaps being considered more seriously right now, are non-military options, things like using cyber attacks to prevent Iran from shutting off the internet, as it's done over the past few days, trying to target computer systems used by the Revolutionary Guard and other security forces. Those might be the sorts of things the Americans at least start with rather than immediately jumping to military strikes.
Just how big are these protests inside Iran at the moment? How do they compare to previous protest movements of 2022 and even 2009?
We don't know right now because of this communications blackout. There are fragmentary bits of information, videos, stories that are coming out of Iran, but it's very hard to have a comprehensive picture of the unrest. But I think what we can say with certainty is the protests have grown a lot over the past few days since Thursday night. That was really the first night when we saw large-scale nationwide protests. I've spoken to some people who think we're now talking about a bigger uprising than in 2022. There are some Iranian analysts who are even comparing it to those major protests in 2009 that followed a stolen election back then. And then I think the intensity of the crackdown, the violence from the regime, is also some of the worst that we've seen. The official confirmed death toll from human rights groups is still in the hundreds, but even they acknowledge that is probably an undercount. And stories that are coming out of hospitals overrun by gunshot victims, morgues overflowing with bodies. It sounds as if the death toll is indeed quite high.
These protests began over economic issues. How have they evolved since then, and what is now driving people onto the streets despite these obvious risks?
I think what's driving people is just an overarching sense that the regime has no answer for any of the existential problems that are facing the country. Economic concerns are a big part of it. The currency has lost 50% of its value just in the past year. Inflation is running above 40%. People are really struggling at this point to pay for food and medicine and other basic essentials in Iran. That's one piece of it. Another piece of it is environmental crisis, which is getting worse and worse to the point where a couple of months ago in November, there were real concerns that Tehran was going to run out of water, but the capital might have to be evacuated because there would not be water for millions of people in Tehran. And then you add to that the war with Israel over the summer, the possibility of another conflict that is still looming. There's a feeling that there are all of these interlocking crises in Iran right now. And again, the government just has no solutions for any of them.
Greg Karlstrom is a Middle East correspondent for The Economist. He was speaking with the ABC's Jay McMillan. We also heard from British-Iranian activist Negin Shirakai, speaking with Sarah Morris. I'm Sydney Peed. I'll be back again tomorrow with another top story for the news on ABC News Daily. Thanks for listening.